Welcome to the Neurology Live Mind Moments podcast. Tune in to hear leaders in neurology sound off on topics that impact your clinical practice. I'm your host, Marco Meglio, editor with Neurology Live. In this episode, we've got Dr. Francesco Sacca, an associate professor of neurology at the University of Naples, who discussed an ongoing study evaluating the use of dimethyl fumarate, an approved therapy for relapsing multiple sclerosis, in patients with Friedreich ataxia. In the conversation, Sacca spoke on the mechanism of action of this medication, its ability to lower frataxin levels, and how it differs from omaveloxolone, the only approved therapy for Friedreich ataxia. In addition, he gave an overview of the trial, its primary endpoints, and the significance of a potential successful study. Let's dive in.
Well, how did this come up? It's kind of really difficult to explain. It's been a struggle to start with this trial in Friedreich ataxia. We started thinking about the trial probably 7 or 8 years ago, and we were not able to find support, financial support for the study. Then once we had the financial support, we didn't have a pharmaceutical company available to donate dimethyl fumarate, or at least to sell it to us at a decent price, because dimethyl fumarate has, of course, a very high price. At the end, we managed, after I would say 6 or 7 years of trying around and moving things around, we had a support from the Italian Ministry of Health that specifically supports investigator-initiated trials. And we also received support from FARA, the Friedreich Ataxia Research Alliance in the U.S. And we also had the opportunity of a donation from Almirall, which is a pharmaceutical company based in Europe, that donated the study drug and placebo for the trial. So at the end, we managed to put everything together, and we had approval from the National Ethics Committee in Italy, and at the end of last year, so I think it was November exactly, we enrolled the first patient in this trial. So it's been a long journey until the beginning of the trial itself.
Talk a little bit about some of the ins and outs of the trial. You know, how does, just talk a little bit about the conduct of the trial, some of the endpoints and things of that sort. How does this trial perform?
Well, first of all, dimethyl fumarate has this ability to do two things. One is to increase frataxin, mRNA, and protein. So the primary endpoint of this trial is the ability of dimethyl fumarate to increase frataxin, mRNA. Why mRNA and not protein? Because mRNA is the methods behind that work way better. It's easier to measure an increase in frataxin mRNA than protein. But protein is a secondary endpoint, so we will look at both of them. Dimethyl fumarate is also able to stimulate NRF2, or NRF2 as you want to call it, which is actually what is doing omaveloxolone, which is the drug we were talking about that is the only approved treatment for Friedreich ataxia. So DMF kind of has both abilities. So other secondary endpoints will be the ability of DMF to stimulate, to improve clinical signs of the disease, and to increase the VO2 max, or oxygen consumption, at the cardiopulmonary exercise test, which is a test that we set up specifically for Friedreich ataxia patients. It is the way it is set up. It's because it's with the upper limbs and not lower limbs, so that you can effectively have many more patients being able to perform the test as with a normal exercise bike. And other secondary endpoints will be, of course, safety, tolerability of the study drug, and clinical scales like the MFARS, which is the American scale, and the SARA, which is the European scale that we use for ataxia, and other clinical measures like the 9-hole pegboard test, the PATA rate test, and the quality of life measures.
And so you talked a little bit about some of the mechanism of action of dimethyl fumarate, but can you go into a little bit more detail as to why we believe that this therapy, you know, could be potentially successful for Friedreich ataxia, considering the fact that this is an approved therapy for, you know, relapsing MS. And obviously MS is a little bit different than FA. So I'm just curious, you know, talk a little bit about the mechanism of action specifically.
First of all, I would like to start from the end. So what we use dimethyl fumarate for relapsing MS. We also have approval in Europe for psoriasis. And that is the compound that we are using. So Almirall produces a DMF that is approved for psoriasis. But what we did, since I follow patients with multiple sclerosis too, is that we had blood samples taken before and after dimethyl fumarate use in multiple sclerosis patients. So with the dosing that is kind of part of our routine practice. And what we saw is that that dose of dimethyl fumarate, which is the one that we are using, is able to increase frataxin expression by 85% in MS patients, which is a lot, because I mean, plus 85% means that patients could reach the same expression level as healthy carriers, which have half of what are healthy individuals. Apart from that, DMF is also able to increase frataxin expression in a specific way to Friedreich ataxia. So that's linked to the silencing of the gene. It enhances expression. So there is a higher chance, I would say, that in FA patients, we might see even a higher increase after DMF. Of course, this is theory. It's not, we have to prove that. But if we look at the experiments that have been conducted in cellular in cells from FA patients or in animal models, the increase in frataxin expression is sometimes twofold or threefold of the baseline. High chances that in this trial, we might see even more than 85% as we saw previously in multiple sclerosis patients, hopefully.
That is the hope. So I'm also curious at the same time to kind of play a little bit devil's advocate here. You know, we've seen other therapies that have shown the ability to alter or increase frataxin expression, but haven't resulted in clinical changes and things of that sort. So why do we believe that this drug may be able to sort of be a little bit more therapeutic, or do we not personally know that just yet?
Well, this is a good point. I think that omaveloxolone is not able to increase frataxin, but still is of some benefit for patients. And this benefit occurs quite quickly after therapy initiation. So that's why many clinicians think that there is a symptomatic effect there. And probably it's linked to the fact that omaveloxolone is able to stimulate on NRF2. So by doing that, there is probably, it's just an idea, an improvement in mitochondrial energetics in general, and patients are getting better. DMF is able to stimulate NRF2. So by doing this, there is a higher chance that you are, you know, acting on two different pathways here. So increasing frataxin, which is a target, a historical target of many of the therapies and clinical trials we've seen in the past, but there is also a chance that it is stimulating NRF2, and it might bring to a sort of symptomatic improvement in the short term and probably even the longer term. So it might do two things in one compound. So hopefully we will be able to see both. So increase and clinical improvement. As the point, you know that clinical improvement is not something that has ever been a target of therapies in the past. So we've always looked at therapies as their ability to increase frataxin and then in time reduce the chance of disease progression. That's the historical view. But I think that omaveloxolone kind of changed things because we saw for the first time that an improvement is possible in these patients, probably because a lot of the clinical signs that we see are due not only to neurodegeneration, but also to a reduced energy production in the mitochondria. I mean, we've done some tests with the cardiopulmonary exercise test, and our caveat there is that their energetics are so poor that they switch very early to an anaerobic metabolism. And so it could be that if you act on that, not only by increasing frataxin, but also by enhancing energy production in the mitochondria, you might have a very quick improvement in some of the signs, which is what we see with omaveloxolone.
We're going to take a quick break from our conversation with Dr. Saka to keep you up to date on the latest developments in neurology. Welcome to the Neurology News Minute. Here's what you may have missed since our last episode. First, on March 25th, the FDA approved ravulizumab, a terminal complement C5 inhibitor, as a treatment for patients with anti-aquaporin 4 antibody-positive neuromyelitis optica spectrum disorder. With the decision, ravulizumab becomes the fourth approved therapy for this patient population, following eculizumab, inebilizumab, and satralizumab. It was approved based on the Phase 3 CHAMPION NMOSD study. The following day, on March 26th, Stoke Therapeutics announced new data from two open-label Phase 1-2 studies showing that STK-001, an investigational antisense oligonucleotide, provided substantial and durable reductions in convulsive seizure frequency among patients with Dravet syndrome. These improvements, coupled with benefits in measures of cognition and behavior, further demonstrated the potential disease-modifying impacts of this agent in Dravet. And finally, on April 1st, Eisai announced it submitted a supplemental biologics license application for a new monthly intravenous maintenance dosing for lecanemab, its FDA-approved anti-amyloid therapy for early-stage Alzheimer's disease. With the submission, those who have already completed the biweekly intravenous initiation phase are now eligible to receive monthly intravenous doses that maintain the effective drug concentration to sustain the clearance of highly toxic protofibrils. For more information about these stories, head to neurologylive.com, or you can check out the corresponding link in the show notes. And now, back to Dr. Saka.
So I'm also just curious, from your perspective, obviously, you know, the primary endpoint is frataxin change, but, you know, what would you consider, and this is a little bit of a unique study in itself, obviously taking a drug from, you know, another sort of disease state and bringing it into this one. So, you know, what would you consider a successful study in a sense? Does the study have to meet the primary endpoint for you to consider it a success? Or to you, you know, would you rather just see some sort of mechanistic changes and maybe just a little bit more target engagement? I'm just curious where your headspace is at with that.
Well, yeah, of course, the primary endpoint is the primary endpoint. So that means a success, even if all of the secondary endpoints fail. So we want to see really that DMF is able to increase frataxin expression, because this means a lot. It's not just like increasing a clinical scale or improving some of the other parameters, because this is the type of innovation that we really need. We need to see an increase in frataxin. I strongly believe in that, because that is what will probably bring in the future to a disease-modifying therapy in the real sense of it. But I mean, it would be ideal to see this coupled to some increase in mitochondrial biogenesis genes, some increase at the cardiopulmonary exercise tests. I'm not expecting in such short trial altogether, it's just 6 months. So I'm not expecting in some differences between treated and placebo patients on the clinical scales, but we are already planning an extension phase of the study. So we could hypothetically follow up these 40 patients for up to 1 year and then match them to historical cohorts and see if even on the clinical measures, there is some slowing of the disease progression. But I really focused on the primary endpoint, because, you know, that is what we're looking for. And that would be real innovation, because meeting that endpoint with an already available and approved treatment, you know, means a lot. And also the pricing of it is very positive, because it's already available and it could be available to a lot of clinical centers here in Europe and in the US too, of course, because it's available to get down to there.
We're always talking about in neurology about getting the most homogeneous populations possible to ensure drug success and show the most clinical possible benefit. So I'm curious, what goes into patient selection for a study like this? You know, what are you guys looking? Are there things that you're excluding for patients? And talk a little bit about some of the trial inclusion for who's specifically in this study.
Well, we didn't have very strict inclusion criteria because since the primary endpoint is for frataxin expression, we're not including patients in a phase three trial where you want to look at progression at the mFARS or the SARA, because at that point it makes sense to exclude some of the outliers, some of those patients that do not have a propensity to progress. That's the key factor. But here, since we have a biochemical endpoint or molecular endpoint, we're just interested in having a classic FA, so no po point mutations, because we don't know exactly how dimethyl fumarate could behave with these patients. But apart from that, there are no exclusion criteria ex except for the ones that apply to DMF. So infectious diseases or hepatic failure, kidney failure, or cardiological heart diseases that are not typical for FA, or in that the investigator's view are not compatible with DMF therapy. But apart from that, we're not excluding patients based on the mFARS or SARA score, or on disease duration, or on age. So there are no filters there.
Well, it's awesome to hear that. And obviously, keep us updated on, how the trial progresses and things of that sorts. Do you have, I know you mentioned that it's only a 6-month study. Do you have any clue of when you guys might conclude and, when you might have, potential results available? I'm just curious. It's a little early, but.
Sure. No, we completed the enrollment in February. So all 40 patients were enrolled. So we are expecting to have the last patient last visit by the end of July. This means that we could probably get some, at least the primary and many of the secondary endpoints by September, October this year. For sure, by the end of the year, we'll close the entire analysis.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Neurology Live Mind Moments podcast. To support the show, be sure to rate, review, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. And as always, for more neurology news and expert-driven content, visit neurologylive.com.